Tricia Torrey, the founder and executive director of AFA, the Alliance of Professional Health Advocates. This is the third in our series of podcasts entitled, Is Independent Advocacy Right for Me? You've identified yourself as someone who thinks that just maybe advocacy is right for you. And because independent patient advocacy is a career for those with passion and compassion for others, meaning you'll probably invest your blood, sweat, and tears. And no, we don't ask you to invest your firstborn child. We do want you to be sure it's a good fit for you before you begin to invest your time, money, and efforts and emotions into carving your niche in our advocacy world. This is our third podcast. It addresses education and experience. What background do you need to be an independent health or patient advocate? Including a question I'm asked frequently. Do I need to be a nurse to be a professional patient advocate? Well, I'm going to take this last question first because it's the simplest and most definite answer to provide. Do you need to be a nurse or doctor or some other clinician to be a professional patient advocate? And the answer is no. In fact, if I knew you better, I'd say hell no. But far better than that is for me to give you all the reasons you don't need to be a nurse or a doctor or any other clinician in order to be a successful patient advocate. Let me emphasize that word successful. And if you're patient, so to speak, I'll also tell you something somewhat surprising about that in just a minute or so, and hopefully something that will spur you on to making the choice to become an independent advocate. So we're going to begin with the many reasons you can be successful, very successful, at advocacy without a clinical background. Reason number one is this: advocacy is not a medical pursuit. Now, let me repeat that. Advocacy is not a medical pursuit. It's an everything else in the healthcare system pursuit except medical. That means that as an advocate, you'll be involved in all aspects that support a patient's journey, but you won't be providing medical care. Now, that surprises many people who consider advocacy, but if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. For one thing, our code of ethics states specifically that advocates will not provide medical advice. Secondly, we're not licensed for medical services. Even if you're a nurse or physician or some other clinician, when you function as a patient advocate under the auspices of a contract that states you don't provide medical services, you can't legally provide them. Further, when you operate as a professional patient advocate, you're not insured, as in having professional liability insurance, to provide medical services. If you do, it will render your insurance null and void. The services you will provide as an advocate are everything else inside the system. So, for instance, on the care side, you might be making appointments or helping a client make a list of questions for her doctor, or helping her fill a prescription, researching clinical trials, sitting by a hospital bedside, or helping an adult child choose a nursing home for her elderly father. That's just a start. On the cost side, you might be getting a claim approved, or auditing a hospital bill, or negotiating a price on a wheelchair, or filing home health or Medicare claims. And of course, none of those things needs a medical or nursing degree or experience to handle them. I do want to provide one side note here, though, and that is, nurses make great advocates, as do physicians or nurse practitioners or physician assistants or many of the allied health professions. They all do because their background knowledge of medicine can inform the work they do with clients. Here's the difference. Say you're working with a client who has diabetes and you see that he has a bad wound on his leg. With a clinical background, you'd be more likely to recognize if the wound isn't healing properly because of that diabetes. You would know to suggest to your client that an appointment with his endocrinologist be made. Now, without that clinical background, you would probably still suggest your client see his doctor, and a trip to a primary certainly wouldn't hurt because, of course, the primary might well recommend your client see his endocrinologist anyway. But that medical background might have shortened the process before your client got the help he needed. Another important point is this. Every nurse I have ever met would be considered an advocate for his or her patients. That's what drives most nurses, their wishes to be advocates for their patients. But of course, not every advocate I've ever met has been a nurse, so there's that. I mentioned a few minutes ago that I would tell you something surprising about whether you need a clinical background to be an independent patient advocate. Drum roll, please. Here it is. Over the years, I've discovered that most doctors or nurses, nurse practitioners, or physician assistants who come to advocacy from clinical careers assume they know how to be advocates. It never crosses their minds that they don't because, after all, they've spent their careers in the middle of the healthcare system. And you know what they say about making assumptions. In this case, it's very true. I can't tell you how often clinicals fail at independent advocacy. Sadly, yes, fail because of those assumptions. What they fail to realize is that in the first few years of advocacy, their ability to be successful is far less about doing advocacy work and far more about learning to run a business, marketing, client acquisition, contracting, insurance, all those things I've mentioned in previous podcasts. Without understanding the business aspects, they cannot sustain a practice, and thus, sadly, those very advocacy-capable people just go out of business. Now, that does not seem to be true among those who come from other backgrounds. Some of our most successful advocates never worked in healthcare, but perhaps weathered a scary medical situation themselves, or shepherded a loved one like a spouse or a parent through tough medical times, or worked for an insurer or a hospital, in some other non-medical fashion, or in some way cut their healthcare system chops by learning about the system in some non-medical way, making them far more cognizant of the need to learn the business aspects of getting started. They didn't come to advocacy with any preconceived notions about their ability to be good advocates. So, like sponges, they soaked up every piece of information they needed. Advocacy, yes. But even more so, business, and thus many more succeed. Now that distinction surprises many, providing a good warning to those who have a clinical background and hope to those who don't. So as you can see, it's kind of a surprise, but it's good for everyone to hear. Now as for the question about education and experience, so far there's been no determination that anyone needed a college degree or any sort of certification or licensing or even any specific experience before they can hang out their shingle and call themselves a health or patient advocate. This includes the requirements of the Patient Advocate Certification Board, which, as of the recording of this podcast, does not require any specific education or experience to take the certification exam. So the answer is no. No specific education, training, certification, or licensing is required. But here's a caveat. That word required is important. Because, as I mentioned in our last podcast, becoming an independent advocate is about creating your own business to do so. And sustaining a business is all about acquiring clients or customers. And they will be the people who want to know about your education or experience. For this reason, it's my personal opinion that you must be at least certified. Becoming certified can often overcome any lack of education or experience. If you'd like to learn more about the role of education, experience, and certification in the development of an independent advocacy practice, we hope you'll consider joining AFA. Why not join today, right now? You'll see on the page where you found this podcast that will credit you with the money you spent to purchase these podcasts. Plus, we'll give you immediate access to the entire rest of the series, too. Plus, there's another surprise for you on the application page, too. Check it out. We hope to see your smiling face at AFA soon, too. And that's it for this podcast. We hope you have a better idea of what sort of credentials and background you'll need to establish an independent advocacy practice. You can find links to even more information right on this podcast page. Our next topic is one of the biggest and most important topics in independent advocacy. That is, how on earth is the world of patients supposed to know you exist? Where will they come from? How will they know to call you? Stay tuned.